So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time. Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look. Hello, hello.
Wait, can you hear that? That is the official theme song for the 1998 Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Because it's a deadly game.
It's like a Motown song with a really bad rap in it.
In 1998. This was the theme of all themes for the WWF.
They chose to include this in the anthology, didn't they?
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
I didn't know that.
They included it. This is how big of a song
you see,
it was.
What I like doing, and by the way, everyone, it's John Pollock and Wei Ting along here, and one of the things I like the most about you, Wei Ting, is that not only do you review it, but you do some research.
I think it's
on the
important
events and the little miscellaneous things that I will undoubtedly always miss, but you catch them.
Well, that's good. We compliment each other in that way.
We do very much. And I want to thank everyone for joining us here. We are going through the 1998 Survivor Series, and then we will be going through our contest that we ran last week, trying to find the worst wrestling videos online that you guys were so generous to go seek out and post online. And we'll be announcing the winners for that contest. And yes, I did say plural there, winners, because we will have a top three. Both of me and Wei, and then we'll decide which people are going to get prizes out of it. But the 1998 Survivor Series taking place November the 15th of 1998 from St. Louis, Missouri at the Kiel Auditorium, or the Kiel Center, I believe. This was not the same location as that Starcade we did from St. Louis.
That was
the Kiel Auditorium, and this, I think, was the Kiel Center that they built afterwards. Anyway, enough of a history lesson there. This one, Wei, was brought to us by Nestle Crunch, complete with the blimp that I would be angered with if I was in the upper deck. This blimp that just goes around the arena the whole fucking show.
Yeah, but it's a blimp that moves, so it's not static. It doesn't block your view the whole time.
But it's enough that it would be an annoyance. And is that the kind of advertising that Nestle really wants, to be known as those fucking Nestle Crunch blimps that are constantly obstructing my view every 80 minutes on this pay-per-view as it circulates around?
I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking, advertising for wrestling, I guess, in the first place. But
the opening montage I thought was very good. It just showed different shots of the participants in the tournament and discussing how big it is to win the WWF Championship, with Fred Blassie doing a voiceover, which I thought was very cool. Then we go to the Deadly Game song, which I remarked was horrible. And then into the event with Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler calling the action. And they actually had brackets, Wei, for this tournament, which you don't get too often now in pro wrestling. But this was I thought this was well done.
To me, the one of the main purposes of holding a tournament is just so you could see the visual of the bracket. That makes it all worth it, in my opinion. I don't know why they would choose to exclude it these days.
So We'll recap them quickly for you. First round matches, we were going to see The Rock against Triple H, Goldust against Ken Shamrock, Mankind against a mystery opponent, Jeff Jarrett against Al Snow, X-Pac against Steven Regal, and Steve Austin against the Big Boss Man, with Taker and Kane meeting in the second round, with both getting byes through the quarterfinals there. We start off the show, Wei, with Vince McMahon coming out on a wheelchair to cut a promo.
So why was he in the wheelchair at this time? I forget.
I think it was an injury angle they did with him, where it was something involving Austin. I can't remember the exact angle.
This was right after Austin did the gun thing to McMahon. Remember the fake gun angle?
I just pissed my pants, where the fans were cheering for Austin to blow off Vince McMahon's head on live television. It's an awesome crowd.
Okay.
So he did the whole build-up for it with this mystery opponent from Mankind, someone that formerly worked for the WWF, then left for greener pastures in WCW, and now is making his return, the coach of the Pasadena Chargers, Dwayne Gill. And Dwayne Gill came out to a, you could hear a pin drop, Wei.
Yeah, well, that was the point. I thought that was funny. It's just amusing that they would actually hire this guy? Do you think they gave him a contract, or were these one-offs?
Oh, he got a – remember, because right after this, he did the whole Gilbert thing. So he was used after
this. It's amazing. That. How much do you think he got paid, a guy like that?
I'm sure he got a – I wouldn't say six figures, but I'm sure, for the contract, you mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they signed him, you know, $60,000, $70,000 contract. They used him for like 6-8 months.
But it's incredible that here's a guy who lucked out. Obviously, maybe a lifelong jobber, but he happened to look so bad that they decided to choose him to play the role of their favorite jobber, basically.
And then he basically did the whole Bill Goldberg spoof during when wrestling was at its hottest over the past 20 years.
Everybody
can probably
him.
Still do indie bookings today, ten years later. That first match, it was all of 30 seconds with Mankind flipping Gil into the ring and then tried a La Magistral cradle, which was a poorly executed way.
It was some sort of different, like, was some sort of roll-up.
And Mankind getting the win. We should note that Mankind was working in a suit in this match because he was apparently Vince McMahon's chosen representative in this tournament as the corporate champion.
That's right.
We then go to a recap of Sunday Night Heat where Jacqueline attacked Sable, and then we go to Kevin Kelly. Remember him in the back with Sable? And Sable states that all that Jacqueline did was piss her off, and now she's even more determined to become the women's champion later tonight. Very necessary.
Oh, boy.
Next up was Jeff Jarrett against Al Snow. We had Deborah on the apron who gave head to Jarrett, the mannequin.
Yes, and thank you, John.
Al Snow grabbed the guitar and went to hit Jarrett, but missed him. So Jarrett hit Al with head, but then Snow clocked Jarrett with the head after recovering from the headshot, and Al Snow gets the win to advance in this tournament. This was a very nothing match.
Yeah, and thus the overbooking of the matches begins with this.
Yes, we'll talk about that later. But
oh my God.
All these first-round matches, I do have to say, very, very quick. And we go now to Steve Austin in the third match of the night against the Big Boss Man in the first-round tournament. They do announce a 10-minute time limit for all these opening-round matches. And Jim Ross, trying to be as credible as possible, states, "We expect these matches to be fast-paced and very offensive-minded," to explain why these athletes will be losing in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Which was always one of those criticisms that I remember hearing in elementary school of asking, why can this wrestler last 20 minutes on pay-per-view, but he can be beat in 3 minutes on TV? And I used to defend it, saying that pay-per-views, they have more time to prepare for their opponent, and they're more ready and able to combat, whereas a TV match is just thrown together, and you don't have the strategy to build. And, you know,
and they'll make more money on the pay-per-views, obviously.
Of course.
They get paid more for each win.
Well, that never entered it for me as a 10-year-old way.
Okay.
I thought these
men now you
just
know.
Did it for the love of the game. We should
Boss Man versus Steve Austin. Boss Man attacks Austin with a nightstick out of nowhere, gets himself disqualified.
But the story of this was that Boss Man was not in this tournament to win. He was in there to injure Austin because it was Vince's goal to make sure Austin is not the champion, yet Austin gets an advance to the second round.
Vince is very happy.
Michael Cole is backstage with Vince McMahon, expecting Vince to be pissed, but Vince just cackles and says, "Michael, the night is young. Oh, the night is young." And that it was. We then go to X-Pac against Steven Regal, who came out to this theme music that I know everyone remembers.
He's a man.
Was even wearing a yellow construction hat.
Wow.
How was this gimmick passing in 1998 in the Attitude Era? This had to have just been a joke to make this guy look like an idiot.
It must have been. I mean, think about it. If you're actually Steven Regal, you come from a mildly successful run in WCW. Now you enter the big show, the WWF, and you're being forced to wear flannel and a yellow construction hat to this theme song.
I just loved how he had to come out and they had to put this over as a serious gimmick. They weren't even, like, joking about it. This was meant to be a serious gimmick. The man's man, Steven Regal. I guess you could almost say this was the best wrestling inside of the ring.
I would say so.
Not
yeah.
a very high quality level of matches on this show.
No, but I will say again this week I was very impressed with X-Pac. He's, you know, very solid in the ring. I've always liked Regal's
style.
He's
great when you pick and choose matches of his to watch.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose so. When it's a pay-per-view and he really has a lot of time to prepare.
Yes, exactly. Really and not just good. Thrown together on TV.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it ended with a suplex on the floor to X-Pac, and that finish was just so weird.
It was weird.
Because they announced that it was a double countout and that both men were eliminated. So Vince is panicking because that would mean that Austin would get a bye in the mm-hmm. next round. So Sergeant Slaughter runs out and he orders a 5-minute overtime period, which first begged the question, if you were so desperate to have a winner, why would you only make it 5 minutes? Why wouldn't you just said overtime, there must be a winner? But I digressed because I was too busy, as X-Pac apparently just said, fuck this, and left, and he went backstage. And then Regal ran after him, and they just, well, I guess we're not getting the 5-minute overtime period, and both men were eliminated.
Yeah,
I wondered if X-Pac was legitimately hurt.
He could have been, but it was just so funny how they built all that up, and then X-Pac just said,
the baby
fuck
face.
It.
I was like, no,
fuck it, I'm leaving.
The match is over.
Yeah,
I'm done. I'm not working again. That takes us to Ken Shamrock against Goldust, and Ken Shamrock, the proud recipient of this week's Scott Putski Award.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a... Actually, I have a Scott Putski story for later.
Oh, okay.
I'll
oh, boy.
Save that one.
Look forward to that.
I miss Ken Shamrock's crazy pre-ring where he was all in his zone,
mm-hmm.
and then he just yells and then hits his head with the mm-hmm. fists.
JR notes that Shamrock has previous tournament experience, so he'll be a real threat in this one.
Actually, what he said was that he had actually never won a UFC tournament, but he had won the King of the Ring and the IC title tournaments earlier this year, and he did note that Shamrock is a former Super Fight champion.
So oh, that's what he meant.
Never he had mind. Competed in UFC tournaments, but never won. But he did win the King of the Ring and a prior IC title tournament.
The true pinnacle of his career, the IC title tournament of 96, 97, whatever.
They noted in passing that Marlena was pregnant. This would be the angle that she would eventually have a miscarriage, which offended a lot of people.
Yeah.
Goldust was setting up Shamrock for the Shattered Dreams, if you mm-hmm. recall, where he would put him in the corner and drape the legs over the ropes.
I thought it was the Golden Globes.
That's what he later turned it into, but originally it was the Shattered Dreams. Shamrock was able to get out of that position, stand on the top, and deliver what must be the worst flying Hurricane Rana I've seen in my life. A guy the size of Ken Shamrock should probably not be doing that. Applied the ankle lock and got the win. Ken Shamrock advances.
I wonder what MMA, you know, purists, like let's say maybe like a big John McCarthy, if he were to see this, Ken Shamrock in this light, what would he think? What would he think about it?
I think he would think that at least he was making a lot more money in professional wrestling than he is now, as he's currently serving a drug suspension in California until February of next year. Shamrock gets the win, and correct me if I'm not mistaken, Ken Shamrock was part of the corporation at this point, wasn't he?
There was no corporation at this point.
Oh, there was no corporation.
The corporation came after this event.
Okay, I was a little foggy here. Yeah. Next up, The Rock and Pat Patterson and Briscoe then came out to DX's music, but Triple H was not there for this first round match. So they had no problem advertising this Rock-Triple H big rematch from SummerSlam in their ladder match.
What was the deal with that?
Triple H legitimately had knee surgery after that ladder match, which if you had been paying attention to Triple H and China, it's our time.
Oh, yeah.
He did mention this knee injury way. So no Triple H on this pay-per-view, false advertising. Briscoe and Patterson come out, and they say they have a last-minute replacement. The Big Boss Man, who we just saw moments ago lose to Steve Austin, comes out, and here's the match.
Oh, this is not fair. What a rock. He's got the roadblock in front of us, the Big Boss Man, and The Rock, wait a minute, inside cradle can, no way! Yes, yes!
You smell what The Rock is doing.
Can you smell who The Rock just put up for the Big Boss Man?
4 seconds, and The Rock wins with an inside cradle, and he's going to the second round, Way.
Not the last we'll see of the Big Boss Man.
No, there was way too much Ray Trailer on this show. Now we go to the beginning of the semifinals, and we start off with The Undertaker against Kane, a match that I never have to see.
Yeah.
And yet it just comes back over and over again. Yeah. They explain that Paul Bearer is now back with The Undertaker because he had left him in 1996 and now is back with them. And they were trying at one point to talk about the backstory involving the fire they had as a child, and it was very confusing.
Why even get into it? There's already enough here.
Here are my notes, Way. Power match, brawl to the outside, Bearer distract Kane, tombstone, Bearer holds down leg of Kane.
Yeah.
Undertaker advances.
My notes were, don't care.
Mankind against Al Snow. This match actually took place on pay-per-view. They actually worked together once on pay-per-view.
They were working an angle here where Vince McMahon had placed Socko around head.
Yes.
Wrapped it around head, and Mankind
and
was...
for weeks, Al had been walking around with head, not realizing what was tied around its head.
Yeah.
So, let's just look at this plan, because there were a number of angles on the show that I did this for, and I gave up after a certain amount of time. We are supposing here that Vince thought of this great idea to get Mankind into the third round of the tournament by placing this sock around Al Snow's mannequin in the hopes that Al Snow would get past his first-round opponent, that Mankind would get past his first-round opponent, and they would be bracketed together, and then hoping that Mankind would notice this during the match, a fact that he has not noticed on TV for the last 3 weeks, because apparently he doesn't watch Raw, and would get so mad that he wouldn't disqualify himself, but would rather win the match. This was a hell of a presumption by Vince McMahon.
Was this the... I didn't even realize that. That's a very...
He was
deep.
Banking on a lot of things to be come into alignment for this plan to work, but it did. And
it
Mankind
out.
Noticed it, got pissed, double arm DDT, and then grabbed the sock and applied the Socko Claw onto Al Snow and got the win.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this match. Corderas at one point just keeps screaming, "No chairs, no chairs!" Yet in one of the one of many instances throughout the night, people end up using the chairs anyway to no punishment whatsoever. Nothing happens. It was very funny seeing Foley wrestle in a suit. At one point when Foley finds a sock, he starts beating up Head. He puts Head in a headlock and starts punching it. Mm-hmm. And then there you go. Mankind advances.
Next up was Ken Shamrock against The Rock. We saw a standing Hurricane Rana by Shamrock into the ankle lock, but Rock reached the ropes. They noted that The Rock debuted 2 years earlier at the Survivor Series. People's elbow, Big Boss Man runs out with his nightstick, threw it over the top rope, but Rock jumped in, intercepted the nightstick, and hit Shamrock in the head and got the win. And Jerry Lawler noted after the match that, "Take a look at Boss Man's butt, because he won't have one after Mr. McMahon chews it."
Yeah, this was the third time Boss Man has fucked up this evening. The whole time I was watching this video, I kept thinking about the video game I used to play a lot on PlayStation, SmackDown 2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever played it, because
nope.
they modeled a lot of the characters from this era of the game, and I just kept thinking about the hardcore matches in the video game, because they just had weapons of all sorts. And I wonder, these are the stupidest types of matches. Why do they have just weapons everywhere? Then I watch this show, and it fully makes sense to me, because every match features a weapon of some sort. You had the sock, the head, nightsticks, guitars, just everything.
This was a tournament booked by Vince Russo with Vince McMahon as the editor, which is only a step above some tournaments from WCW and TNA. But we'll talk about that later. So The Rock advances. We have a promo backstage, Michael Cole with Paul Bearer, who says The Undertaker will win. Awesome. Then we get a break from the tournament. It's Jacqueline against Sable for the Women's Championship with Shane McMahon as the referee, because, you see, Shane McMahon, and this will play into things later, Shane McMahon was demoted to a referee because Steve Austin was fired by Vince McMahon at the prior pay-per-view, and Shane McMahon signed Steve Austin to a 5-year contract, because apparently Shane McMahon had the authority at this point to sign guys, signed him to a contract, got him back in, and Vince McMahon demoted him. So Shane has enough power to sign the top talent, but not enough power to retain his position in the company. So he's now just a lowly referee.
That's how it happens. And now where is he? Now he's gone completely, isn't he?
And Shane was, he is gone now, January the 1st. Shane McMahon was a horrible referee. He started a 5 count on Sable before the bell was rung. What was going to happen if... And all she was doing was taunting Jacqueline outside the ring. It was very weird because they had Sable's hair tied into Jacqueline's hair.
Yeah.
You notice this.
They
did an angle where they cut off some of Sable's hair, and it was woven into Jacqueline's hair.
See, but there was way too much of Sable's hair on Jacqueline's hair for it to seem real. This was like a whole wig that was tied onto Jacqueline's head.
Sable hit a very, very bad TKO. Went for the pin, but Mark Merrill was on the outside and pulled her off. Sable almost murdered her husband with this powerbomb to the floor and almost dropped him on his head.
Yeah.
Jacqueline attempted a tornado DDT. Sable blocked it, hit the Sable bomb, and won. And this was a shades of UFC 91 with Mrs. Lesnar winning the championship.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Very, this big match. 3.5 minutes, which is probably the most you should ever book Sable in a match. We then go to the semifinal match between Mankind and Steve Austin. Austin attacks Foley with Foley's own shoe. Foley was able to avoid a stunner. Then a chair was brought in, a stunner onto the chair, and the referee, I believe...
Hold on a second. How does that make sense? A stunner onto the chair?
The stunner was just sitting there, and I guess he did a stunner while the chair was on the ground. It would have more impact.
He sat on the chair. He landed on the chair. Austin landed on the chair. It had no effect whatsoever on the person he was attacking.
All right. I don't remember the spot at all. I watched this way too long.
Basically,
ago.
He did a stunner and he sat on a chair on the floor.
He didn't take the bump as a result. He just landed in a chair instead of,
which should actually hurt more.
But it's not as big a fall as falling to the apron. You're taking two feet off the 1 foot off the drop.
This is outrageous.
Good
luck explaining this finish, Jesus.
Okay, so Austin hits
Austin hits
the stunner.
Yeah.
There's no referee there as he goes to pin him. Shane runs from the back.
No. What? Austin stuns Mankind. The referee starts counting. Vince gets out of his wheelchair.
Oh, that's right. I didn't know how the ref took the bump. You're right. They pulled him out, and Vince just clocked the ref.
Yes.
So there's no ref.
And then Foley's pants fall down for some reason.
So we see his brown tights underneath his suit. Why would you wear your tights underneath your suit?
And then Austin stuns Mankind again. That's when Shane comes out.
Shane runs in. He goes, 1, 2, and then gives Austin the middle finger.
And then there's a lot of pause. I think maybe Foley might have forgotten his cue here. Finally, the Stooges come in, and they attack Austin with the chair. Gerald Briscoe hits Austin with probably the softest chair shot you'll see in the whole 2 years of the WWE from this point. And then Shane gives the fast count for...
Mankind gets the win. So let's get this straight, everyone. It was so important for Austin not to win the title that they came up with this grand plan that, hey, I'll sign him to a 5-year contract. So we'll fuck him out of the championship on one night and give him 5 more years to try and win the title. Why would you sign him for such a long period of time? Why wouldn't you just sign him to, like, a 1-year contract?
Or
a 30-day probationary contract where you must win the title in those 30 days?
But why wouldn't you sign him to your contract and not use him on your TV?
Yeah, just keep him at home.
To keep his stock down.
Oh, there was a lot of logic. The whole Austin McMahon feud, when you think about it, why didn't Vince fire him?
Because he would have... gone to a competitor, and the competitor would have succeeded far beyond what Vince would
have
been
able
to do. That
was never in the storyline. WCW was never part of the storyline. He hated him. He fired him in storyline once. Why couldn't he fire him again? I guess his contract had a no-release clause in it.
Okay, that's why.
That must be why. We then see Vince and his crew run backstage, get into a car, and take off. Austin just breaks into a man's car, throws the man out, commandeers the car, and drives after them.
No.
We lead to The Undertaker and The Rock. They brawl into the stands, which, why would you risk that? If you both get counted out, you'd be eliminated from the tournament.
That's true.
Not the smartest move.
And then Mankind would automatically be the champion.
Jim Ross noted that, how can Shane McMahon look in the mirror? I thought he had integrity. very apropos for the WWE today.
Oh.
Because Shane's leaving.
Yeah.
Potentially for the UFC. The Rock made fun of The Undertaker's sit-up motion. Then the Big Boss Man came out again.
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 We thought he left. Didn't they show him leaving?
No, they said that... No, it was them that left, and Boss Man was still there. It's later on that Boss Man leaves, supposedly.
Holy shit, this is like five times.
Where a lot of the a big lot of Ray trailer. Man. And Rock made fun of the Boss Man, and you could clearly hear this, where he made a motion that of his stomach, and he's like, "You fat piece of shit."
No, I thought he was talking about Paul Bearer.
I think he was looking at the Boss Man. One of them he called a fat piece of shit.
Both fat pieces of shit. Oh, no, they're not.
Taker sat up, and for the second straight week of Review Away, zero reaction to The Undertaker sitting up. Am I not the only one that generally gets a pop every time you do the sit-up?
Yeah, I'm not that impressed.
Nothing.
It's just a sit-up.
Kane runs in and chokeslams The Rock. Taker does nothing to stop this.
No. Taker actually tossed The Rock into Kane, so I thought they were working together.
Why? He gets disqualified as a result.
Yeah, but you don't know when they're going to DQ you or not because you saw chair shots all night. Who knows? Maybe Undertaker's
thought. Taker was relying on the inconsistency of the officiating.
Yes.
That he would be able to get away with a choke slam from an outside force.
Oh, yeah.
Taker's eliminated, everyone. Rock's going to the finals.
And then Taker attacks the ref. And then Kane
and Taker fight.
And then Kane attacks The Undertaker. I thought they were suddenly working together.
They even said, "Are they back together?" No, they're not. Oh, my God. I didn't hate this as much as when I watched this, but I'm getting annoyed at it now all
this
at once.
This is outrageous.
I watched it in chunks. Michael Cole's backstage with Mankind. He says he has one more hill, or should I say rock, to climb if you smell what the sock is cooking. Yeah. We then go to a tag match that lasted 17 minutes with the New Age Outlaws defending their titles against the Headbangers and the team of D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry. One fan, I shouldn't say one fan, a city of fans, had a sign that covered the Road Dogs' entire promo in the audience.
Yeah,
the whole ladies and gentlemen speech, they had it all written out in the upper deck.
That was neat.
And both men acknowledged it.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Ross notes that Mark Henry's claim to fame is he was a part of the 1996 U.S. Olympic team, and he filed a sexual harassment lawsuit against China. Those are his two claims to fame. When he dies, those will be the two moments that people will discuss.
Well, he's done a lot more since then, much more to be proud about.
Yeah, he's also helped give birth to a hand.
Yep.
And he has somehow remained in this company for 13 years.
That really is.
That is impressive.
Thing, yes.
Billy Gunn had brand new tights. He had lip shapes on his ass, but they were skin colored.
Yeah, were they some? I thought they were even like a mesh material. I thought they were a sort of a meshy material.
I didn't look that long.
No,
he was the baby face though, and was a horrible baby face.
I have no clue why the New Age Outlaws, why they're as popular as they were. I mean, I admit even back then I was
not good
a fan.
Workers.
No, but like the terrible looks, the Road Dog, like his
hey,
hair.
Hey, I guarantee, outside of marijuana, he probably passed every drug test.
Probably, yes. But I had just.
That's
had
not
no
true.
Clue.
He actually did rehab during this period as well, so he was taking other stuff. Thrasher at one point said, "Suck that, buddy," and lifted his skirt up towards Billy Gunn. Road Dogg sold most of the match. They built up to a hot tag for Billy Gunn. D'Lo hits the sky high on Gunn, and rather than break up the pinfall, Road Dogg comes in and runs across the ring to attack Mark Henry on the apron, rather than breaking up the pin, which I found a little odd. Billy Gunn wins the match for the team with a pile driver onto Mosh, and Ross calls this match unique. And then Billy Gunn mooned the audience with his falling thong, which was gross.
Great.
Uneventful match, and very long.
I couldn't care less.
Now we're backstage, and Vince and Shane are back in the arena, and Boss Man is now leaving, because he's had a hard night's work.
He's done a lot.
He deserves a big payoff for this show, whatever it did on pay-per-view. And that brings us to the finals, Way. Mankind against The Rock for the WWF Championship. And they started the match by taking some pot shots at WCW, with Lawler stating that, "You'll get to see all of this pay-per-view." And Ross noted, Well, that's not very nice to make fun of those who are less fortunate. That's this was 3 weeks after the 98 Halloween Havoc.
That's right.
That was cut off early.
That's right.
They brawled into the audience. Again, I question that motive. Then The Rock went mental with chair shots, Way, and this is, I think, what you were alluding to earlier.
No disqualifications.
Did they announce that?
They didn't announce it. JR had to suppose it.
He said, Earl Hebner's the best in the business, and I'm sure he is giving a lot of leeway in this match because we need a winner.
No, and I thought he also said, I'm sure Vince McMahon had forced Earl Hebner not to disqualify anybody. They had to explain it.
We saw the just insane amount of chair shots by Rock onto Foley, who had the steel steps on top of him.
Yeah.
Saw people's elbow for a two count. The Socko Claw came out. Rock broke out of it to hit the Rock Bottom. Again, only a two count. Then Vince comes out. Rock just glares at McMahon, applies the sharpshooter, and Vince calls for the bell in a rehash of the 1997 Survivor Series. So even when we tried to avoid reviewing Survivor Series 97, it still played into the event we chose.
Mm-hmm.
So The Rock wins the championship. Then he embraces Vince McMahon. Vince, Shane, The Rock, and Mankind all have a promo after the match where Mankind cannot understand what has happened here. And then they said, well, maybe you can understand this. And The Rock beat the shit out of Foley. And I was just, my head was kind of reverberating from all of this. And I guess, in a sense, you can at least make sense of the fact that they planned out this huge scheme to get the title onto The Rock by letting him have all these little shortcuts through the work of the Boss Man, who basically put him over in the first round, gave him a nightstick in the second. Then Kane, who would later join the corporation, gets Mankind disqualified. No, he got The Rock, allows him to win by disqualification, and Undertaker was DQ'd to get to the finals, and then they did the screw job in the finals. Lots of booking in this show. And if you were paying attention to the TV closely, the most I will say is that Russo tends to do stuff that it's just all in one night. At least this, when you talk about the sock being tied around, at least that was like planned out 3 weeks in advance. There was a purpose for it. It was way too much on one show, but at least they were thinking forward ahead by 3 weeks.
Wow. Yes. I mean, this to me played out more like an episode of CSI than a WWE event. I mean, how many clean finishes?
You did have to take note. Oh, there was the tag titles.
There's Mankind versus Dwayne Gill.
That was clean.
I guess the Boss Man versus The Rock. And, I mean, was that
Jared
it?
And Snow was not clean. Shamrock and Goldust was a clean finish.
Nearly every match out of the 14 in this involved some sort of run-in or a weapon or something outrageous. And it was just, kind of funny.
After the show, we got the post, the VHS exclusive footage, Way, which I don't know if you watched.
I watched it.
It's The Rock walking backstage with a camera on him for 2 minutes. He notes the thousands and thousands of The Rock's fans, because this was just the beginning stages of The Rock, I guess. And then he ends it just by saying, the Titanic still sunk, Romeo and Juliet still die, and The Rock still lays the smack down. It's not needed.
And I also saw Sean Waltman in the background.
Yes, he was seen quickly there.
So I guess
backstage.
He wasn't injured.
I guess he was okay. One thing that really annoyed me, Way, is that on this VHS set, if you were to look beforehand, not only do I see that Shamrock and Rock must advance in the first round because they're in a match here, which must be in the second round. But when I look over, I see that The Rock has won the title.
What the fuck?
And he is with Vince McMahon. So if you bought this video and tap in to turn it around, the results are right there. Why would I watch this whole pay-per-view when I know what's going to happen at the end? They put the title on the guy and on the side.
Yeah.
God so damn it.
Even when you're just browsing your collection of tapes and you happen to see the photo on the side, on the spine of the VHS.
Just put The Rock's face or Vince's face or a Survivor Series skull.
I know this would ruin this show for me.
I'm glad you didn't notice it because I did. So that actually took a star off of this rating for me.
Ooh.
I'm going to give this show a 6 out of 10.
I also give it a 6 out of 10. I mean,
not the worst show I've seen.
No.
A lot of booking, but some of it, the matches were kept short, but there wasn't one good match on this show. Oh, no. Like, none of these matches, you know, on a typical pay-per-view would get anything above 2 stars.
I've recently seen the South Park episode of that parodies WWE. Have you seen it, John?
I've seen some of it. I didn't watch the whole thing.
All right. Well, basically, you know, they take pro wrestling and they treat it like it's like an opera, you know? The whole show, it makes fun of it that way. Uh-huh. And this pay-per-view, to me, screamed exactly that parody. It was a show that had way too much involvement from the writers.
All right, so that's the Survivor Series 1998. Before we get to our contest, Wei, what would you like to review next week?
We occasionally receive emails from our listener, Thor. I don't know, you're familiar with Thor, right?
I am familiar with
yes,
Thor.
Yes, so over the past couple months, or the past month, Thor has emailed us these long emails, and in fact, he's taken it upon himself to upload a show that he wanted us to review.
Wow.
I didn't respond to him a week, but Thor got really, really angry. Sent me a reply saying, "Wei, why did you even acknowledge my email?" I said, "Thor, I'm sorry. We get a lot of emails."
You don't have to apologize to that guy. He's a little crazy.
We get a lot of emails, Thor. I don't always check all of them. Anyway, Thor, as I promised to you, we will review your pay-per-view of choice that you have graciously uploaded onto your FTP with a total size of 1.4 gigabytes.
Jesus Christ.
Unforgiven 1999. Let's do that.
Is that the Kennel from Hell pay-per-view?
I believe it is. Oh, I believe it is.
That's awesome. All right. Kennel from Hell next week, everyone. Something to look forward to. Now we go over to our contest, and if you're just tuning in for the first time this week, last week we sent it out to the listeners to go find the worst wrestling videos online and then post them on our Facebook page, the official Facebook group of Review Away, and we got a ton of videos submitted.
How many did we get?
Well, I've got two pages here, so wow. I'm just going to quickly run through all of them. We're not going to obviously go through each one, but I just want to list them all and give people credit that took enough time to post them for us. So, Wei, if you want to add in a comment for any of these videos.
Wait, so how do you want to do this? You want to just run them down first and then go give each top three or what?
Yeah, let's do that. We'll go through the videos.
Just go through them.
And then me and Wei have put together our top three on our own. Yeah. So we've got Daniel Markey sent in the China Maneater video. WWE Funniest Moments from Devin Clark. The Ultimate Warrior on Arsenio Hall from Alan Izak. Ultimate Warrior Angry Promo from Christopher Francis, who also sent in the wrestling interview botches. I'm just going to go through these really quickly. Jeff King sent in Ken Patera Butches a Promo. X-Pac versus Super Porky in Slow Motion, which I enjoyed. The Christian Piperuni from Nicholas Quaglia. Scott Steiner against the English Language. Brian Pillman wrestles a pencil. Chris Jericho Promo on Chris Benoit. Booker T sings Sexy Boy. Craig Valentine and his racist promo. SummerSlam 89 with Gene Okerlund yelling, fuck it. That's always funny. Yeah. WWF, it was a singing segment with Austin, Angle, Vince McMahon, Jericho, Kane, and Undertaker. A video on John Heidenreich to the tune of Du Hast by Rammstein. Dwayne Gill's debut as Gilbert. WCW rap is crap. Chris Jericho gets lost going to the ring. The Spinal Tap parody. Chris Jericho doing a promo as the man of 1,004 holds. Hitler hates Cena. Mr. Kennedy's ring intro in Australia for the Hulkamania tour. We had the Tony Holm, who was Ludwig Borga, against Boogie Commando video. Jake Roberts at Heroes of Wrestling, Shockmaster debut. Hulk Hogan's fake orgasm on Thunder in Paradise. The Iron Sheik 2007 shoot interview. Hulk Hogan's cheesy Japanese commercial. A match between Max Moon, a.k.a. Conan, against Dwayne Gill from a WWF Superstars edition in the 90s. Glow's opening wrestling theme, Blast at the Beach, featuring Sting and the British Bulldog, William Regal peeing on Big Show, RoboCop in WCW, a strut-off between Larry Sweeney and Colt Cabana, Kamala sings, I feel like I'm doing the Chris Jericho 1,004 holds promo right now.
Wow. Yeah,
these are a lot of videos. Okay, I'm not going to go through them all. There's another
page. There's still a whole page?
Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
Kamala sings, Super Dragon Chant, PCS push-up challenge from TNA, a Too Cold Scorpio video from WCW, Super Duper Mario, Brett versus Isaac Yankum promo, The Sandman Intoxicated, Bill Goldberg falls on the ropes after a match.
That was awesome.
That one was funny. Lex Luger struggles with his t-shirt. Bam Bam Bigelow from the movie Major Pain. Michael's overselling for Hulk Hogan. Sid's infamous promo saying that he has half the brain that Kevin Nash does. From Scott McCullough, Gorgeous George against the Masked Marvel. Jim Ross's My Ass song. Booker T calling Hulk Hogan the N-word on a WCW pay-per-view. Claudio Castagnoli's 100 rotational swing. That was cool. Sheik and Abdullah Farouk. A Randy Savage promo from ICW. Sid oversells a leg injury, which Sid overselling is a plus. WCW botching their live editing. That was just ridiculous. Randy Savage on the Robin Leach show. The Hickenbottom Boogie. An auto-tune version of Booker T calling Hulk Hogan the N-word. The Wrestle Rock Rumble. And Chris Sprules versus Cage Tyler with Tom Campbell on commentary. Those were all the videos, so I want to thank everybody for going out of your way to post these videos. Me and Wei went through all of these videos, and I guess we each had different scoring methods. For me, I voted first. I put I scored it out of five, where I gave you a mark out of five for how funny I found it, and then I out of five for how original the video was. So the Shockmaster debut, very funny, but I've seen it a million times. Same with Lex Luger struggling with the shirt. So ones like that didn't do so well as compared. So it had to be a combination of something that, you know, as me and Wei, wrestling reviewers, journalists, have seen quite a lot of stuff. So if you, you got something to us that we found new and unique, you got more points for it. And Wei, I don't know how you scored this. You maybe just picked what your favorite was.
Well, I tend to have chosen the videos that were more unintentionally funny. I mean, a lot of things like the rap is crap, all that stuff is very funny, but I like things that aren't supposed to be funny.
Like fuck-ups.
Yes, like fuck-ups. And I tended to reward more based on that. And just like you, I rated more based on how rare a clip
is. Yeah, I think you definitely get points for that.
But also, I also voted more on, I guess, length. And, you know,
length, I definitely want to discuss. Because there's something I always hate is when someone will say, hey, John, come check this video out on YouTube. You go over to their desk, and suddenly it's a four-minute video.
Mm-hmm.
That's way too long. I think stuff that's like 8 minutes, very hard to keep someone's interest for that long. I'm much more prone to watch something shorter that keeps your attention and keeps the funny, keep you wanting more, rather than waiting for the bar to get to the end. And a second thing, montages, I found, didn't do as well for me.
No, I didn't like that either. I found a lot of times the editor actually got in the way of a clip actually being funny. So
one in which the editing was just so terrible, but by the end of it, I still enjoyed it, was Scott Steiner versus the English language.
Yes, I had seen that. Well, anyway.
It just keeps going back to his bitch comment. Anyway, it was rather funny.
But no, just to get back onto the length, I do agree with you, John. But like, I for this contest, I tended to reward more rather than, you know, some of the clips that were just maybe like 20 seconds long. I didn't feel like those were enough to warrant the whole prize to me. Like me, so
to me, if something, I would never take away something being short. But to me, the long ones were, it's tough to sustain comedy because I am now voting, or at least evaluating, based on the whole 9 minutes. So anyway.
Okay, I see that.
So let's just go back and forth here. We'll move our way up. So for number three, I went with the Too Cold Scorpio promo video from World Championship Wrestling.
Everybody, here comes the Scorpio!
Ain't you kids supposed to be in school?
Nah, man, we going to the game room.
What do you mean to the arcade? You guys need to be in school trying to get an education. Tell you what, I'll take you guys to school.
Are we going to ride in the limousine?
Nuh-uh.
We're going to walk?
Uh-uh. Let me tell you what we're going to do. We're going to step.
This was incredibly, incredibly campy. And it's basically Scorpio showing up at a basketball court with these kids who are skipping school. And he says, and he shows up in a limo. And the kids ask if, in fact, they're going to be taken to school. And Scorpio's like, no, we're going to dance. And they start dancing in the basketball court. This big black woman starts dancing. And it was so cheesy. And here's this role model who was at a Toronto indie show years later, strung up on coke. Anyway, so that was number three for me.
That was cool. My number three was the Ultimate Warriors appearance on the Arsenio Hall show. This was probably like the in promotion for WrestleMania 6.
1990.
Oh my god!
Awesome. Because more so for the fact that Arsenio Hall had to conduct this interview with this maniac who was in character.
Here's the Ultimate Warrior. Runs out into the crowd after they announce him. Runs through the crowd. Runs onto the set. Knocks over the table. Knocks over the chair. And Arsenio this whole time is like, what the fuck are these wrestlers on? How... What's going on here? The whole time, Ultimate Warrior is cutting a promo.
Hulk Hogan has been the greatest WWF champion there has ever been. But I, the Ultimate Warrior, have not yet been. Sunday, April 1st, as my warriors hang from the ceiling of the Sky Dome and at my command, they make the sacrifice, then I will begin my reign as the greatest WWF champion that ever lived!
Okay. Too much coffee, man. Come and sit.
He's wearing these cowboy boots and like this white getup. He was just dressed right out of the 80s.
And Arsenio's facials that they cut to were just hilarious.
Oh, he didn't know what he was doing with this guy, and it was just unbelievable. That was, I put that as number two.
Okay.
Ultimate Warrior on Arsenio Hall, and we got to thank Alan Ishak for that one, and I'll mention Chris in L.A., who's a regular caller on the law, who sent in the Too Cold Scorpio video. And you're number two, eh?
My number two was the WCW Blast at the Beach vignette.
Awesome.
From featuring Davey Boy Smith and Sting.
And Cheatham.
And who?
Cheatham the Midget.
Oh, God. Anyway, this was all in a promotion for the pay-per-view, and it starts off, this is like a what? This is a pretty long one, but...
This was like a production that WCW put together, because they wanted to be doing more kind of movie type.
We're talking
stuff.
Like super produced, like tons and tons of money where you could tell what was put into this. Starts off with Sting and Davey Boy on the beach playing volleyball. Playing volleyball with a group of people. And then you see Colonel Bob Parker, Sting, and Sid and Vader.
Vader with Harley Race.
With Harley Race.
Was awesome in this.
They're on a boat. They're plotting to do something to Sting and Davey Boy. Something happens, and you'll just have to watch it, but basically they plant a bomb.
Because the midget is swimming through the ocean with a fake shark thing, and then puts a bomb into Sting and Bulldog's boat.
Yeah.
I only here got the key, the event was Beach Blast.
Beach Blast, oh. Or Blast at the Beach.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, they have a show off finally with the two teams. Harley Race offers Sting and Bulldog a retirement package, saying, here's two tickets to what Florida for your retirement.
Look, and there's no retirement packages in pro wrestling. They should have taken it.
Sting pretends that he's going to take it, and Davey Boy's like, what, Sting, are you serious? And the two of them collectively say,
nah, I don't think so! We'll send you a Beach Blast!
Sets up the match, and then these two little kids tell them about the bomb they mysteriously saw put in. Sting goes to take the bomb out of the boat. The most ridiculous explosion goes off as the Bulldog is running towards Sting, and he tackles him as the explosion goes off. The kids are all weeping. The kids are crying because they think they've just seen two wrestlers die before.
And when we say crying, we mean like... They can't help from laughing. They found probably just people off the street who could not act for shit. And there's this one visual that I just remembered of this guy, this black guy, taking off his sunglasses slowly. That, to me, was just perfect. So perfect for this.
So as they're holding their breath, thinking that these two are dead, Sting and Bulldog don't just get out of the water and give a thumbs up. They jump out of the water with their arms in the air that we have conquered death. This was so cheesy. And then it goes back to Tony Schiavone, who's just back into wrestling mode selling the pay-per-view. And it was awesome. It didn't make my top three, and I'm questioning now why it didn't. They actually, Wei, did a few of these videos.
Did they?
For different pay-per-view events. All of them featured Cheatham the Midget. And I think we'll have to seek those out. That who sent in the Beach Blast one? That one was Chris from L.A. sent that one. He sent in the two Cold Scorpio and Blast at the
Beach.
Wow,
good for you.
Chris from L.A. coming in strong. And that brings us to my number one video, and I went with... Hitler Hates Cena.
Oh, my God.
I had never seen this video before, and apparently there are quite a few of these online. So simple to do, but just so good. They just matched it up perfectly with Hitler describing John Cena. And this was the
this
only
This is Hitler
one.
From Inglourious Basterds. It's a scene from Inglourious Basterds,
yes.
By the way.
So it's just him yelling and complaining about John Cena with the title. And there's one scene where it's like, if they keep booking this shit, I'll start watching TNA. And then another woman is crying, and the woman next to her says, don't worry, he's not that desperate. And it maybe doesn't have the best rewatch value, but this is the first time I saw it, and I was by myself in my work computer, and I was just crying laughing watching this. So
all right.
I thought this one got the biggest response from me, so that's why I
went. Who is that from?
Hitler Hates Cena. It was from a little kid. The picture on it was a little kid.
You look very
Josh Manti.
Josh, good for you.
So,
good for you, Josh.
There you go.
Yeah, I had already seen a lot of these videos before, so they didn't really have that effect on me. But, okay, that's cool. My number one was from the AWA, the Wrestle Rock Rumble.
This was good.
This, to me, was, wow. This was just exactly what I had hoped to find with a contest like this. Basically, oh, my God. This is gold. If you haven't seen it yet, pause this video, watch it now, please. Because the Wrestle Rock Rumble is basically a rap song that the AWA, for whatever reason, decided to use for Wrestle
Rock. The oldest white man's promotion ever.
It starts off with the what's the host's name? Ken something. Right?
Oh, I can't remember his name, but he's rapping.
Nick
Bockwinkle, Vern Gagne's rapping, the Rockers.
Scott Hall, Kurt Hennig. They're all rapping. And the
Larry Zbysko.
The thing is, when they're rapping, you figure that they're listening to the beat in their headphones or something, but every rap here is offbeat. Incredibly offbeat. This was like the Wu-Tang Clan of bad wrestling ideas. So you have, not only is the song terrible, not only is the rapping awful. By the way, Larry Zbysko probably had the best flow in the whole song. That's it. But the visuals they used to accompany this video were so weird. They had lookalikes of like Marilyn Monroe and Elvis Presley in between. They had girls from the Playboy Mansion. At one point, you see Scott Hall and Kurt Hennig walk into a casino, and they greet Shawn Michaels, who's walking out of the casino with his girlfriend, supposedly, who's like a really short girl. They're all just shaking hands, talking. This, to me, was awesome. And if you actually Google, there's a good write-up about the whole Wrestle Rock Rumble, dissecting all the lyrics and everything. Google it, Wrestle Rock Rumble. It's a classic. And who sent that one in, John?
That was actually Tony Sakic.
Tony Sakic.
So,
thank you.
A lot of some good videos here. So we're going to send videos to... DVDs to Tony Sakic and Josh Manti, who got our respective number ones. Also going to send one to Chris in L.A. For sending us that fantastic two videos, Two Cold Scorpio, as well as, what was the other one he sent their way? He also sent us...
Blast at the Beach.
Blast at the Beach. Yes. So we're going to send both of those out. And the other one was, we'll send one to Alan Izhak as well, who sent us the Ultimate Warrior on Arsenio Hall. I'd never seen that before. I'd seen Savage and Hogan on there, but not Ultimate Warrior. So you four guys, we will contact you with the DVDs you have won and send them out. We won't promise them to be the best DVDs, but we will be sending them out nonetheless, because we did promise one,
the SmackDown
yes. one will be sent out. So we'll find out who wants that one. Anyway, we were going to do another contest for next week, because this one went over pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
This one will be different, a bit easier. Rather than videos, we want you to find the most ridiculous photos in wrestling or mixed martial arts and post them into the album where you can put pictures on our official Facebook group for Review Away.
Mm-hmm.
The best picture will earn another DVD next week. Which DVD, we do not know. So just go start posting it. Again, it'll be open until next Friday at noon, which will be December the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do the same deal and then run this down next week. Because I enjoyed this contest quite a lot.
Oh, I loved it. What everybody's done is put a great archive of some of the worst wrestling videos that
we have
are
like
out there
60
on the internet.
Great caliber shit videos now posted
it's fantastic.
On the Facebook site.
But yes, about the photos, feel free to make your own. I mean, if you know Photoshop.
You will definitely get extra points if you Photoshop stuff yourself.
Yeah.
The more creative, the better. So, and it can't be funny by just posting something and putting a funny caption underneath. I think the photo has to speak for itself.
It should, require a bit of effort.
Because the caption, that's a whole other contest.
The competition's high on these things.
Yeah. And if you have any ideas for future contests, by all means, contact us. John at thefightnetwork.com, way at thefightnetwork.com. Join the Facebook group. We're going to be looking at the 1999 Unforgiven pay-per-view next week, featuring the Kennel from Hell Hell in a Cell match. And we're going to go out with the Wrestle Rock Rumble.
This is Ken Resnick, and I'm here to say we've got the greatest wrestlers in the AWA. But you're not here to listen to me mumble. Let's fill you in on the Wrestle Rock Rumble. Get on!
Wrestle Rock, be there.
We're the Midnight Rockers, Sean and Marty. We love to wrestle,
and we love to party.
You don't have to worry, we're not gonna fumble, cause we'll be shaking to the Wrestle Rock Rumble. Ow!
Wrestle Rock.
I'm the Sheik, and that's not funny. I got my army a lot of money. If Gunny in my way, I'll make him crumble. He be sorry, I did the Wrestle Rock Rumble.
Wrestle Rock, be there.
I'm Jerry Blackwell, and I want the Sheik. I want to get my hands on that pencil neck geek. As I watch the EDF fumble, I'm going to make my splash in the Wrestle Rock Rumble.
The AWA, you, me, and Wrestle Rock.
I'm Greg Gagne, and I'm in a rage. I want Brody, and I want him in a cage. A high-flying dropkick will make him see double. I grind him up at the Wrestle Rock Rumble. Woo!
Wrestle Rock.
I'm Kurt Hennig.
And Big Scott Hall. As tag team champs, we'll take on them all.
So bring on the Long Riders, those dirtball dumbos.
We'll smear those bushes,
do the Wrestle Rock Rumble.
Rockwinkle, and I've got a passion. I'll get the title back from that humanoid Hanson. I've got the brains, and I'm not humble. I'll take the belt back and do the Wrestle Rock Rumble.
Wrestle Rock, in Falconia, at the Dome.
Wrestle Rock, 86, be there.
I won't be through till I get done slapping around Scott in the suit. Gonna beat the ugly bartender into a bundle and laugh all the way doing Wrestle Rock Rumble. Ow!
This game duck got a mouth that won't quit, but I'm Scott McGee and wanna smack a little shit. And when I'm through, you won't be able to mumble. I'll be left alone doing the Wrestle Rock Rumble. Yeah!
Just one last word from the former champ Vern, but give it a lot of thought to one more turn. There's some old scores that still give me trouble, and I'm starting to get the urge to do the Wrestle Rock Rumble.
So there you have it, and now you know them. And on April 20th, it's at the Dome. So get your ticket to be under the bubble, because you two can be doing the Wrestle Rock Rumble. Do it!
Wrestle Rock Rumble. Wrestle Rock Rumble.
The Wrestle Rock Rumble.
Wrestle Rock Rumble.